Well, thanks for joining me. This is episode 235. In episode 233, we began a series entitled Key Concepts from Climate Cult. That's where I talk to you about the fact that the climate change agenda is being run just like a cult, and it's drawing so many people into their clutches without most people being aware of the fact that what is being preached is oftentimes pure fantasy. It's not rooted in sound science. And they've been able to gather people into the cult with scare tactics, we talked about that, as well as the promise of a utopia, a heaven, so to speak, on earth. That was episode 233. In episode 234, we continued with part two of Key Concepts from Climate Cult. And I shared with you two distinctly different philosophies. Told you all about Marxism. In this particular episode, we're going to talk about the opposite of Marxism, which is capitalism and a free economic system. So we're going to contrast these two forms of economy and also these two forms of government. Because while Marxism believes that some people are born with a leap of intelligence, whereby they're smarter than everybody else, and these elite people with all the brains have some sort of metaphysical right to rule over everybody else. That's really at the heart of Marxism. You see in socialist and communist countries throughout the world an elite class that actually lives pretty darn well compared to everybody else, because the elites do not trust the lower-minded. Because left to their own devices, the lower-minded are going to destroy the planet, kill everybody, so they need to be regulated. There needs to be a heavy hand of control over them, and they need to be mollified. I mean, even in the Roman Empire, they did this with the lesser-minded. That's why they had the circuses, that's why they had carnivals, and that's why they had the Colosseums, where people could be easily entertained and given cheap wine, and they'd be okay. Well, it was no different in the Soviet Union. I have friends who lived under communism during the Soviet Union years. And, they had sports and they had cheap vodka and they had free rent. Of course, the places where they lived were crappy. The elevators in those large, tall buildings rarely worked. There was no heat in the winter, but, everybody had all of their needs met by the government. This is where the climate change agenda wants to take us, by the way, into that type of a world. And so the climate change agenda sees the United States of America as the big guy that needs to be taken down, because they believe in things like life, the right to life, the right to own property. And Karl Marx said it best, and we learned about this in the last episode. Karl Marx said it best. The goal of communism is very simple. It's the abolishment of private property. They don't want you to be able to own your own house. That's not fair to people who can't own their own house. They don't even want you to own your own car. It's not fair. What about the people who have to take mass transit? They want to provide for all of your needs according to their riches and their glory, and that's why they hate the United States so much. And in the name of climate justice, they will look at the United States saying, well, you've been the biggest polluter on the planet, and as such, you need to be punished. But they forget that we've done an exceptional job in the United States of America on how to clean up our skies. And if the rest of the world would just like to take note, we could easily share that technology with them, sell that technology to them, show them how to use that technology. They could clean up their own skies too. But it starts with a system of government that, I might add, is under attack domestically, under attack in the United States of America to this very day. So the form of government, if I could just give you a quick tutorial, and again, I expand on this in great detail in Climate Cult, but just a very quick tutorial on what makes America so unique and how we differ so much from Marxism and why we need to work so hard to maintain this system of government. So here is our guy, John Locke. What a gentleman. He lived from 1732 to 1804. So he was able to watch the United States of America come together, but he was never able to visit. He was a professor of philosophy at Oxford University. He was also a medical doctor. He was a jurist, just an absolute wonderful man, had no enemies. But he came up with this concept of natural rights. Natural rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness, of course, is the ownership of property. These are rights given to us by God. They are inalienable rights, or unalienable rights, means the exact same thing. This was conceived in the mind of John Locke, and the founders of the United States of America so appreciated this guy's thinking that they thought to themselves, wow, if we could ever do a government separate from Mother England, we could do it like Locke has talked about. It could be a nation without a king, without a queen, without oligarchs, without dictators, without military strongmen. It would be unique to the world. And we could found it on these principles of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and also something known as natural law. What is natural law? Natural law is that thing that's in every person's heart. You know the difference between good and evil. You know the difference between a truth and a lie. You know the difference between right and wrong. It's in our heart. These are the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, Jesus said, could be summed up in love your neighbor as yourself. We all understand this. Now, there are certain people who choose not to live that way, but it's all right here. And so the founders said, wow, if you could put together a country whereby the government would uphold these natural laws, that would be something called liberty. See, that's what the liberty is this. We are all afforded by God the right to a government that upholds the natural law, that upholds the natural rights. And all of those things are in the crosshairs right now because they're the antithesis of the climate change agenda, which is really the spearhead of organized collectivism, socialism, and communism. All the same, Marxism. Those are at the spearhead being used right now. The climate change agenda is being used to take down life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Everything John Locke talked about. And everything, quite frankly, that the founders of the United States of America were all for. This is the unanimous declaration made by the founders of America in the Declaration of Independence. And by the way, as I read, may I just remind you, I talked about this at length in Climate Gate, as well as Eco-Tyranny, and I touch on it again in Climate Cult. You have to realize the signers of the Declaration of Independence, these 56 people, truly in signing this, they were willing to give up their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And many of them did. Many of them ended up losing their lives because they signed that document. Many wives of the founders as well. You know, there were 55. Benjamin Franklin was the only signer that was not married at that time. Of the 55 signers, all of their wives, and there's documentation to prove this, you know, their wives were consulted. The husband said, if I sign this document, it could be off with my head and off with yours as well. There were kitchen table discussions that I'm sure were just tearful that we've got to sign it. Husband, you've got to sign this document for the sake of our children. You've got to sign it. Well, there were many wives that paid with their lives. Most people don't know that, but I give you those stories, especially in my first two books. It's very, very touching. And I know that there are some to say, oh, the signers of the Declaration, oh, they were all slave owners. Well, the truth be told, 14 of the 56 did, in fact, own slaves. But you also have to remember this. Those 13 colonies were like 13 different countries. And the southern colonies, their economies were based on slavery. True, they were. The northern colonies were greatly opposed to slavery. Benjamin Franklin, for example, about this very same time, started what turned out to be a very successful anti-slavery movement. But the only way that those 13 colonies were to come together is because they had a common enemy, and that was Great Britain, the King of England. That was their common enemy who was making life so difficult for them, purposefully. And so they realized we need to hang together or hang separately. And regarding the issue of slavery, it's amazing that they were able to come together. And I'm going to go back to that important document just as a moment. But it's amazing they were all able to come together. But one thing they agreed on was, whether it was spoken or unspoken, they agreed on this. We're going to have to deal with slavery at some point in time. But right now, we've just got to protect ourselves from a common enemy. So these 13 colonies allied, and they decided we're going to put together a nation, and it would be the United States of America, 13 colonies coming together. By the way, very important, we did confront the slavery issue. We did confront it. 600,000 Americans died in that war. It was bloody. It's America's original sin. And the consequences from that original sin are present to this day. There's no question about it. And the left likes to capitalize on that to this day by creating division amongst us. But let's go back to this founding document and look at it very clear-eyed, taking a step back and seeing what this document actually says. Because the climate change agenda is opposed to what we're about to read. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another. Okay, they're talking about separating from England and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. The laws of nature, we talked about that. The laws of nature's God, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the Ten Commandments, love your neighbor as yourself. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. This is where all the colonies came together. They were putting aside their differences on slavery to agree, okay, yes, all men are created equal. We're going to deal with that eventually. It's going to be bloody, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable God-given rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is only possible with an economy that is free from government regulation and government interference. It's to be a free enterprise economy. It's to be a capitalistic economy. And Karl Marx was so opposed to that idea. And that's why, as we continue this series of key concepts from the book Climate Cult, you will see that the whole root of the environmental agenda at large has been created to take down capitalism. Now, where did this whole idea of capitalism come from? Well, it's from Adam Smith. He was a Scottish philosopher, and in 1776, he came out with a book entitled The Wealth of Nations. I'm going to share with you just a few key concepts from Wealth of Nations. The first is regulations on commerce are ill-founded and counterproductive. In other words, regulations imposed by the government screw up the economy and create things like inflation. Here's another point. Productive capacity rests in the division of labor and the accumulation of capital that makes it possible. So in other words, in a free economy, there are divisions of labor that naturally become apparent. And those divisions of labor could be everything from, okay, you've got your electricians, and you've got your plumbers, and you've got your manufacturers, and you've got your roofers, and you've got your framers, and you've got your bankers, and you've got your lawyers, and you've got your shopkeepers. This is just something that naturally happens. In a government-regulated economy like Marxism, well, the government decides who's going to have those particular jobs. They won't be created based on skill or talent or aptitude. The government just takes over and starts putting people into slots, and you get messes. I mean, that's why, for example, in the Soviet Union, you would have these 20 stories, and I've seen them with my own eyes, these 20-story apartment buildings made out of ugly concrete with elevators that wouldn't work. Or again, you'd have a infrastructure that was always damaged, everything from the roads being garbage to the heating in the houses that was free, not working properly. So government intervention stifles productivity. Government intervention stifles creativity and innovation and ruins an economy and also impacts your pursuit of happiness. Continuing, a country's future income depends upon this capital accumulation. So if you want to become the richest nation in the history of the world, the government needs to get out of the way so capital can be accumulated, because capitalism is a wonderful thing. I know the socialist, the communist, the elites don't see it this way, but it's true. In a high tide, all boats rise. In a high tide, everyone does better. So that person on the lower end without an education, without a lot of skills, can still make a living. You don't have to live on the streets. You don't have to live in your car. There are ways for you to make a living and work your way up the ladder. You know, this is very personal for me. My grandfather came to the United States of America when he was 13. He had nothing. 13 years old, had nothing. But he worked his way up the ladder, not even knowing how to speak the English language, worked his way up the ladder and ended up becoming a very wealthy man before the Great Depression hit. And the Great Depression of the 1920s happened in large measure because of stupid government policies. But I digress. Adam Smith also wrote, when governments grant subsidies or monopolies to favored producers or shelter them behind tariff walls, tax walls, they can charge higher prices. The poor suffer the most from this, facing higher costs for the necessities they rely on. Well, let's look at the government subsidies today that are aligned with the climate change agenda. The subsidies that are provided, the tax credits that are provided for purchasing an electric vehicle. People purchase these things and they get into the electric vehicles because there are incentives to purchase them. And there are also incentives right now and demands by the federal government for automotive producers to produce a larger percentage of these electric vehicles. The problem is people don't want them. One, most of them are incredibly expensive. Two, people don't want to sit for 45 minutes at a charging station while their battery is charging. And three, by the way, it's very true, and I break this down in Climate Cult. If you drive your average electric vehicle 14,000 miles a year, that if you charge it at home, that is increasing your electricity consumption in your home by 50%. You're using 50% more electricity in your home when you're charging that vehicle. But this is just an example of how government subsidies can screw up the marketplace. And so what do we have as a result of this? One more thing. As people are not buying these electric vehicles, and as manufacturers are producing more of them because they're under compulsion to do so by the federal government, we have a shortage of the other vehicles that people want. So there's a supply and demand issue whereby those vehicles are more expensive. My gosh, I drive a 2002 Dodge truck, which I love. I was pricing new trucks these days. You could easily spend $90,000 on a truck. That's because of a supply and demand issue that's been artificially created because of the government and this rush to get us into electric vehicles. Oh, if I could just do one more on this. Gas prices. We used to be, with Donald Trump, we were energy independent. Now we're energy dependent. Gas costs more, diesel costs more. Those are transportation fuels. It's caused the price of everything to rise. Now, this hurts pretty much everybody, but who does it harm the most? The poor in this country. Now, this is another point. Competition and free exchange are under threat from monopolies, tax preferences, controls, and other privileges that producers extract from government authorities. This is why we have laws preventing monopolies. But at the same time, we do have certain monopolies in the United States of America. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, the two biggest monopolies are the National Football League and Major League Baseball. And what's happened as a result of those being monopolies? Well, they're making more money than ever. The players are making more money than ever. But how are they able to do this? We've priced people on the lower end of the economic scale from being able to go to these games. My gosh, even people in the middle. So go to one of these games, you can't afford it. You know, starting with the parking, starting with the ticket price. Well, that's going to cost you, depending on where you sit, hundreds of dollars. Then you've got the parking. Then you've got the concessions. It's a monopoly that's pricing everybody out. In the meantime, certain people are making buku bucks. Just two little examples of monopolies that we tend to shrug our shoulders on. I say, oh, well, whatever. But those are real monopolies, and you can see the result in terms of the pricing. Next, government must be limited. Its core functions are maintaining defense. This is what our government was intended to do, a limited government. Maintain our defense. In other words, protect our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Maintain order by upholding natural law. Build necessary infrastructure and promote education. Now, just a quick word on unnecessary infrastructure. The problem today is governments build things that aren't necessary. And they do this oftentimes as a jobs program to reward stakeholders. Stakeholders in this case would be union bosses. And as a result, we're building things that cost a lot of money that oftentimes we don't need. Or retrofitting properties, government properties that don't need retrofitting, but it's a jobs program, so we do it anyway. But then there's also education. The money that's being wasted on education in this country is indeed a waste because the money's going to indoctrination. You talk about a monopoly, that's K-12 education in this country, overseen by a union, the National Education Association, who does not have our children's best goals and best ideas in mind. They have for our children ideas that come from radical thought, environmentalism, for example, or teaching U.S. history in a way that trashes the United States as opposed to uplifts the United States, or doesn't teach U.S. history at all, or teaches kids how to do math nowadays in such a confusing manner as if they're trying to just scramble their brains. But this is the education system today. We've lost control of the education system. We, the people, have lost control of our education system, and that's why people are so easily drawn into this cult. Another principle, capital prosperity becomes an expanding pie. Everyone gets richer, but capital can be lost through mistakes, theft, or government spending and taxation. As I mentioned, when the economy is rolling along in a rising tide, all boats rise. But when mistakes are made or when wrenches are thrown into the works purposefully, we get hurt. And we're seeing a lot of that right now, especially with the current administration in Washington, D.C. Some might say they're doing this purposely. And sometimes it seems like they are. Okay, now this is not from Adam Smith. This is from yours truly. But the climate agenda demands a complete retooling of global governance and society at large. And now they're really big on something called democratic socialism. They'll tell you it's different than Marxism. It's different than communism. It's different than socialism. This is democratic socialism. Democratic socialism. These are not my words. These are words from a wonderful philosopher from the 1940s. He saw this so well. I want to go back to this slide really quick. French Nobel laureate Friedrich Hayek said democratic socialism is the road to serfdom. In fact, he even wrote that in his book, The Road to Serfdom. And this is why I wrote the book Climate Cult. You have the philosophy of Marx colliding with the philosophy of John Locke and the founders of the United States of America. It's a monumental collision. And unless there is education to equip the people of this country to see through this baloney, we're going to be in trouble. And by the way, the book will come out May 28th, but you can pre-order it now at Barnes & Noble or Amazon. Price is $18.99. That's a special price. Once May 28th arrives and the book begins to be shipped, the price will rise. So now you can get it at a discount. Pre-orders are very important in the bookselling industry because, one, they generate buzz within the industry, and two, it helps with distribution to brick and mortar stores. So I appreciate your support. Now, in our next episode, as we continue to develop these key concepts from the book Climate Cult, I think these next two episodes are going to be great, especially for homeschoolers, or if you have students in, say, junior high and high school, because we're going to talk about the temperature record of the Earth, and we're going to talk about CO2. CO2 is not a pollutant. It's an element essential for life. It's essentially a fertilizer. When there's more, life on Earth flourishes. We'll talk about that, and we will also set straight the temperature record. My friends, thank you for your support. Thank you for your encouragement. If you'd like to get a hold of me, just go to briansussman.com. There's a contact page and you can get a hold of me there. I do read those emails that are sent to me and I oftentimes respond as well. So thank you for that. My friends, may God bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you. And may God bless the United States of America. Thanks.